Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Leslie Daniels. Daniels is a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania and the New School and holds an MFA in fiction from Vermont College. She has written and published short stories and essays and for many years worked as a literary agent. She is a past editor of the Green Mountain Review. Her well-received debut novel called Cleaning Nabokov's House was recently published by Touchstone Fireside, an imprint of Simon & Schuster. And Daniels has been nominated 3 times for a Pushcart Prize. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, you're the child of 2 psychologists and even studied psychology for a time in college. What made you choose writing as a career?
Well, we all have our moments in our families where we figure out what we love. And my family spent a lot of time sitting around the table talking about people's behavior, whether it was my dad's patience or it was my friends at school. But we shared that, and that was really a high point of the day for me. Mm-hmm. And in my writing, I think I continue to be fascinated by what people do. And if I meet you, I am very quickly trying to see what kind of a person you are and what you do, not necessarily to exploit it for my fiction, but just it's an interest.
Well, you mentioned in your biography that the first short story that you wrote actually got published. Do you remember what the subject was?
Oh, that was lovely. I don't know how many writers are listening, but to have your first story published is just such an affirmation. The story was about being in, you're familiar with musicals, so I was an actress for a while, and I was hired to be in Guys and Dolls, only it was an all-female version of Guys and Dolls, and I had this marvelous summer in Provincetown, and the story was about that.
It was about that experience, but it was fiction.
Yes.
Fictionalized version. That's great. Well, why did you not pursue theater?
I did pursue theater. I was an actress for a lot of my 20s and the beginnings of my 30s, and it was a tremendous experience. I started writing for theater. I wrote some monologues, and I wrote a play. And as soon as I started writing, it was as if my brain flipped a switch. And I stopped being interested in other people's. I couldn't even memorize words. I was doing Chekhov, and it was just coming out Leslie Daniels.
Really? So you decided you needed to create your own voice in some ways.
I think it was a wonderful thing to do, and it was something, writing was something that I could do by myself. It wasn't something that I had to be hired to do. I think we all look for ways that we can shape our careers, and writing gave me a lot more autonomy and independence. Important.
Well, while you were pursuing this writing career, you were also working as a literary agent for quite a long time. Tell us how those two things came together and worked for you.
I started as an assistant for a literary agent, and she was a very talented, warm, book-loving person. And I think, like many people, my tremendous experiences in learning have come through some great teacher, whether it was deliberate or accidental. And she helped me create this identity as an agent. I always felt that I was a writer who agented, I managed to work with a lot of tremendous writers, and that was very exciting to me.
Yeah. Well, then, do you think it helped you in any way as a writer yourself? Did it give you any insight into your own writing? Were you able to step back and sort of be the agent for yourself?
That's sort of 2 questions. I am not the agent for myself, and I encourage anyone who is a writer to find a good agent and find good editors, because it's sort of impossible to have any kind of objectivity about your own work. On the other hand, I knew a lot about how to behave as the client of a writer's agent. What not to do.
Well, let's talk about your recently published first novel, Cleaning Nabokov's House. Tell us about the main character, 39-year-old woman just divorced, trying to pull her life back together.
Well, I think Barb is like it's Barbarette is the character, and she finds herself at a very particular place that we've all been in, where the circumstances are extreme enough. In her case, she's lost custody of her fairly young children, that she has nothing left to lose. She's left her family, her home, and moved to a place that's alien to her, and she has no friends, and she's lost her children. So it puts her on her own resources in a very particular way. I mean, we all understand, whether we're mothers or just have beloved people in our life, that if they are threatened, we'll do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has to kind of do anything to get her feet under her again and to get her children back. And you find out who you are in those circumstances.
Yeah. And throughout the book, you could see her discovering aspects of herself that she didn't even know about. And then part of it was the fact that she had moved from a big city to a small upstate New York town and had to deal with it by herself after the divorce, and then the children were gone. She had to figure out how to create a life in an alien atmosphere.
Well, I think in Ithaca, but in a lot of places in America, people are moving through, whether they're here for a job or college or because their partner, their spouse has a job and they have to move there. So we are often reinventing ourselves and making new friends and finding our way around a place. And for me, I had never lived anywhere that wasn't a pretty large city. And to move to a place as quiet and small in terms of population was very curious. And it was so quiet when I was in my house writing my book that I just thought, maybe everybody else is in their house writing their books. And so I'm waiting for all my neighbors' novels to debut.
Now, how did you come with the angle of her moving into Vladimir Nabokov's house? That seems very interesting. Obviously, it's a major part of the plot.
That part is true. I did buy a house, and it turned out to have been lived in by Vladimir Nabokov. Mm-hmm. When he was at Cornell, he was here for a decade, and he's a little bit like the George Washington of this town. I mean, he had some 8 to 10 residences, and I just happened to be in one of them.
That's interesting to me. So you're telling us that this book is very much autobiographical, right? I was going to ask you that question. It seems to me that it probably is, but now you're almost, you know, announcing that by saying that you even moved into his house.
I think there are elements in every writer's work that are from their lives or from stories that other people have told them, but that begs the question of, I mean, as human beings, the most magnificent thing we can do is to make stuff up. And that's, no, it's fiction. It's invented.
Uh-huh.
There are things in it that are no way true.
Well, were you worried about the fact that, I mean, it obviously, to any of us who lives here, it's the Ithaca area where this book is set. Were you worried about, bringing real people into the book who would recognize themselves?
The real people in the book are two people who have died, and the third being Nabokov, who's not in the book, although his work is in the book.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I felt that it was perfectly fair and wonderful to portray my beloved dead father and to take some liberties with, but portray my beloved dead cousin. And mm-hmm. Everybody else is made up.
Except for the main character. How much of Barbarette is really Leslie Daniels?
Oh, that's the Oprah question, isn't it?
Not necessarily. It's the out-of-bounds question.
It's the out-of-bounds question. Well, I hope writers who are listening have writing groups, because it is so extremely precious and valuable to have critique partners that can listen to your work, and it was very, very helpful for me. And I had the experience of them being completely on the side of my character. It was as though I was somewhat of an inconvenience. I was the writer who was not writing fast enough to introduce them fully to Barb Barrett, because that's who they fell in love with. And I was just the lady who, you know, wasn't making her deadlines.
So that's how you'll put that, huh? That question about how much of it really is you. Well, I could ask you if it was cathartic, and depending on how you answer.
Was it cathartic to write? I think writing can be incredibly satisfying.
Mm.
I don't know if cathartic is how I would put it, but we all feel about our lives, what do they add up to? You know, I lost my beloved grandmother, we've all had, living is such a series of losses in, if you look at it one way, particularly as you get older. I mean, people in middle age are so often dealing with the loss of their parents or the decline and beloved friends. And what do you do with those memories? What do you do with those experiences of loving someone and having that relationship end? And for me, gathering some of that into the book is the most satisfying part of writing it. That and making people laugh, which is really tremendously fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you think about maybe turning this into memoir, though? I mean, I often talk to writers who do admit that fiction gives them more freedom. Is that how you felt about that as well?
I feel that it's a very high calling to entertain people. And if you can, I mean, I love to laugh. It's my absolute favorite thing. My daughter and mother and I got the giggles in this absolutely terrible restaurant last night where we were the only people there and we couldn't stop laughing. And it was so fulfilling. So my life isn't really funny. It's interesting. It's not funny. I wanted to write a book that would make people in book groups ask each other questions and talk about their own experiences. And, you know, it's far from memoir. It's made up.
Yeah. I mean, that's what fiction does, give a lot of people freedom to do what they want, instead of memoir, when you do have to worry about other people's feelings and your own memory even. Yeah. Well, so let's talk about the fact that there's a whole lot of humor in this book, and I loved it. And I did laugh out loud a few times. But I felt often that she used humor as a defense.
Absolutely.
So talk to us about that. How did you find that fine line sometimes? It wasn't always that way, but that was part of her character.
I think humor is a tremendous defense, and I will advocate for it. I think being able to joke or to laugh about the very difficult things that happen is, it can be a coping strategy. I also think it can be a way to push people away. And that's, as a writer, there were times in the book where I would go towards making a joke when the material was tough. And I had to, as I revisited things, say, no, the feelings here are really tender or sad or somber, and I must honor that.
Did you also use humor sometimes? It seems to me it detracted sometimes from the character letting us know who she was. Was that part of it as well?
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, that's just me. I mean.
Well, no, that's probably me too.
But I thought that was an interesting point. I mean, a lot of us want to keep secrets. No, nobody wants to reveal everything. I thought it was quite interesting, actually. No, not a negative.
Yeah, I don't know what to say to that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Leslie Daniels. We're talking about her new book called Cleaning Nabokov's House. The character in this book also likes to cook. Leslie Daniels likes to cook too, I would assume, right?
I do, yes. I feel that cooking is central, and I can always connect to people who cook. I'm always fascinated by it. In fact, if people want to write to me at my website and tell me what they're cooking, I will be interested. I love the tangible of making food for other people and eating it together.
You know, you the main character was somebody who used to be an editor for a psychology magazine. That was one.
She was a fact checker.
A fact checker, exactly. So you use your psychology a lot. You know, some of your background, and she would quote from the psychology magazine. I thought it was quite hilarious.
Yes, well, that stuff's all made up. I mean, don't please read that book and think that's real, because that is nonsense. It's very fun.
Well, I've always thought fiction and psychology can go hand in hand quite often, you know what I mean?
Yes. Uh-huh. I don't know if people have had the experience of when you go to school, you want to learn the facts. And when I studied psychology, I so often had the experience of, well, this is just somebody's idea about something. And I didn't really get to the hard facts till we got to brain chemistry.
Well, I don't know if there really are hard facts anymore. Because, you know, the FDA says drugs are safe, and then 2 years later we're finding out people are dying from it. I think facts in some ways are fluid when you're talking about the human mind especially.
Yes, although psychology and neuroscience have gotten together, some of the fascinating stuff in psychology now is close to biology.
Yeah, so it's more like neuroscience. Now, your book has often been referred to as women's fiction. Do you like that designation? Do you think it puts you in a little cubbyhole? How do you feel about that?
Well, coming from the publishing business, there's a very strong, I don't know if it's a bias or an understanding, that women are the book purchasers. They may end up in the hands of men, but in particular with fiction, that women are the book purchasers. I am very happy for all the readers that connect with it.
All fiction is considered women's fiction. You know, this is almost, it's also almost like chick lit.
Oh.
It's designated probably a shelf, a specific shelf, like gay and lesbian literature. To me, I mean, that's what I've been hearing your book referred to as, and it seems to me more than that.
I think that it's very hard to make a statement without using women's fiction as a slightly derogatory term, which I don't think it is.
No, I wouldn't call it derogatory. I would say it's limiting your audience by using designations like that.
I don't know. Guys like it too. Let's say that. But I think that it explores. I mean, people are very interested in gender and in what happens between men and women, and sex is tremendously charged, and I do a lot of investigating that terrain, which I think is entertaining to people.
Yeah, but I was thinking that men might not pick up a book that's called women's fiction, and of course men would be, it would appeal to men, but I'm saying this designation might make them not pick it up and see how much they'd enjoy it.
I think the publisher is not seeing it specifically as women's fiction, but I do think that they think it will be a very provocative book club book.
Yeah, I would assume so too. Yeah. Now, do you read reviews? Do they affect you one way or another?
I've been reading them so far because they've been so good.
Oh, that's good. But do they affect you? I mean, did you ever have your short stories reviewed? Any?
Yes, I did. And you know, the pleasure as a writer is to have someone really connect with what you're trying to do. And that's really exciting. This is what I'm looking for. I am looking for seeing some stranger. Let's say I'm on a subway car in New York City and somebody's reading my book and chuckling, and they'll never know it's me and I'll never know their name, and that's what I want.
So you want to feel that kind of a connection.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're teaching anybody anything by writing a book like this? How to navigate relationships, perhaps, and ideas on that? To me, it wasn't just a straight, funny book.
No, it's not a straight, funny book. You're right. I hope that I'm bringing hope. I believe that, you know, we have capacity to reinvent ourselves, to pick up the pieces and move on. I watched all the people I love do it in different ways, and kids do it every day, and I hope that it has that kind of a message.
Are you at all worried about the title? Because a lot of people in the younger generation don't know who Nabokov was. Don't, if you say Lolita, they would, but
they might. It was interesting to me to that, you know, that was the most complicated course I had to chart for myself, which was to both give the theme its due and not shut people out who hadn't read Nabokov and hadn't. Mm-hmm. Some people didn't know, hadn't read Lolita,
yeah.
hadn't seen the movie, and to still know who he was.
Have you gotten any reaction from people in these small towns that you portray in regard to how you've portrayed?
Well, it starts out very somberly about the upstate world and the upstate New York world. And I think that, that's a hard question. For me, writing the book was a way to connect both with the place and the people. And I hope that people see that journey.
Yeah. No, we could see the character evolve in her take on the small town, which she at first was uncomfortable with, obviously, and sort of made fun of. So how long did it take you to write this book? Were you also evolving while you were writing this book,
goodness,
or had you
yes.
already?
I started writing it when my beautiful little girl went off to kindergarten and I had my days back.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it took several years.
And so you found yourself evolving with
Absolutely.
The character, perhaps?
Yeah. I don't know about with the character, but I started it. The book has changed so much
mm-hmm.
in the beginning.
Did you find anything surprising in yourself that came pouring out of this book that you didn't know about?
I think that writing is, well, it's a process of recognizing yourself in a way. I don't know if it was, I certainly learned a lot about myself as a writer.
Yeah. It says in your biography that you enjoy teaching writing. To tell us in what ways you do that. How do you inspire?
I love teaching writing. And everybody knows a kind of an ideal state for creativity, whether you're a quilter, whether you're a cook, whether you're a soccer player. There's a place that you go where it's all working, it's all cooking. Mm. And as a teacher, I can create that state for my students temporarily, but when you are in a place where you're flooded with ideas and you don't feel inhibited about, oh, this idea isn't good enough, you can just spool it out there on the page. That's tremendous. And I love doing that for other writers.
Mm-hmm. Well, where have you taught?
I've taught workshops at different graduate schools, graduate writing programs, and then I've taught a little bit on my own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you tell aspiring writers? I've had a lot of writers on who say one of the main things you have to teach people who are aspiring writers is to stop censoring themselves. Do you find that to be good advice as well?
Well, I love to connect with people around their work because very often you're not censoring generally, but there's some theme that you're stepping back from. Or some aspect of the work you're stepping back from, and an outside eye can say, hey, embrace that. It may feel too revealing or not smart enough or something, but you have to go towards that and see it.
Mm-hmm. How does being a literary agent work? Do you take on people, anyone? I mean, like a lawyer would for the state? Or do you pick and choose and decide that I only want to work with writers who I think are good, or, you know?
I'm not a literary agent anymore.
No, I know you're not.
I stepped away from that when the book sold,
mm-hmm.
partly because my own agent said, you have to stop. You have to write another novel. But I had a remarkable track record of I never took on anybody that I didn't sell.
Uh-huh.
So I was terribly discriminating, probably too discriminating. I didn't have a lot of clients. I had select, wonderful, really talented, fun people.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised by some of the people who are trying to get writing published?
I think writing is very important for people's lives. I think it's a tremendous thing to do. I think publishing it is in some ways not relevant to the process of writing it.
Mm. Did you really feel that way? You wouldn't have mattered if that book had never been published?
Oh, for me? No. But I do.
Yes, for you.
I do a lot of writing that I'm not thinking about, oh, this is going to go in this magazine or what. I just write because I'm witnessing life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So are you somebody who's always compelled to, you know, stop the car and write down thoughts? Like, often I find that a lot of poets do that.
Well, they're good poets.
Waking up in the middle of the night and saying, I have to jot something down, you know.
I sleep very well, and I try to keep the car on the road. But I do think carrying around little notebooks is a very good way to go.
Tell us, are you still going to write short stories? Has this, the fact that this book has been published, changed your whole idea of yourself as a writer?
It was... I used to think that people were either short story writers or novelists, and that I was not a novelist, primarily because the idea of plot just boggled me. But I think it was tremendously fun to be in the middle of a big project.
Mm.
I think weaving together themes with more commitment to seeing a real arc is challenging in a way that short story writing isn't to me anymore.
Yeah, I've always found short stories, especially really good ones, unsatisfying, because I want more meat. And that's why I like the novel form better myself.
I agree. I also adore short stories. It's a little bit like...
It's a real art.
A joke.
It's a real art.
Yeah, being at a party with someone who just tells you a wonderful joke or a wonderful story, and it's perfect in that moment. That's mm-hmm. one of the great things about mm-hmm. short stories.
Are you going to segue into different arenas with your next book? Are you working on a next book? Or is it going to be about a woman who's
I'm working,
creating
I
her life?
I am working. I'm thrilled to be working again. I don't know exactly how closely related to this book it will be.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're almost out of time. I want to ask you this one last question. Were you a fan of Nabokov? And did you find anything like his ghost in the house that you live?
I had a moment of, when I first got there, of tucking myself into bed with a book of his that I hadn't read but was on my shelf, and looking at the copyright page and realizing that he had probably been working on it in this bedroom, in his beautiful mind, some 50 years earlier. That was as ghostly as it got.
Well, can you give some contact information so people can get in touch with you, Leslie?
Oh, please. My website is lesliedaniels.com, and it has the readings scheduled for the book. We have a great one in Ithaca on the 7th at the Kitchen Theater, and it also has reviews and information, and there's a contact page.
Great. Well, Leslie Daniels, thank you so much for joining us. The book, again, is called Cleaning Nabokov's House, and I highly recommend it. It was really a fun book to read. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you so much, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. We are a sponsored project of the Art Spire, a program of the New York Foundation for the Arts. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.